Winchester Talking Newspaper, Friday the 7th of April 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
We're sorry you've received this recording so late, probably Tuesday now, but the Easter, of course, has caused quite a bit of disruption in the post office. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229, and this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. The main headlines this week are: Fears new pipe is a threat to rivers, Cathedral crowds gather for Palm Sunday procession, and lunchtime concerts to showcase young talent. So, may we have the headline behind the first story, Heather?
Fears new pipe is a threat to rivers. Battle lines are being drawn on a water company's plan to install an 8-kilometre pipeline through Hampshire. Southern Water has applied to lay a raw water pipeline from a field east of Totford near Alsford, finishing at the Test Valley Trout Farm near Itchen Abbas, to improve the reliability of water supply during droughts. The application has been quick to receive objections, with people concerned over the impact on the county's chalk streams. Objector Richard Buckby said in a letter to the County Council, "I am very concerned about the effect of this pipe on the water flow to the Candover stream. It would be extremely detrimental to the environment. It would damage the River Itchen, which is one of the most important chalk stream rivers in the world. It would also have a serious effect on trout fishing, an activity that brings a lot of money into the local economy. I object very strongly to this application." Criticism also came from Lord Ashburton, whose family owns the Grange at Northington and much of the land through which the proposed pipeline passes. His objection reads, "The Itchen and its tributary, the Candover Brook, are chalk streams which enjoy the highest status in the United Kingdom as special areas of conservation and are habitats of internationally recognised importance. This application threatens the long-term health and survival of these habitats by abstracting water from the Candover aquifer during periods of severe drought when the river flows are already dangerously low. Southern Water argues that the chalk aquifer will recharge during the following winter and early spring, but there is no guarantee that this will happen." In its latest application, Southern Water said the pipeline is needed to contribute to the maintenance of water supply reliability in drought conditions, thus ensuring a resilient supply for customers and socio-economic activity. The planning application states the scheme will be a temporary measure up to the end of 2030 until new permanent supply solutions are in place. The majority of the 8-kilometre route will be 7 kilometres of permanent below-ground pipeline. But the pipeline will also have 5 temporary above-ground sections of pipe and other temporary accesses, hard standings and plant, including a temporary water booster pumping station. Objector Michael Abrock of Church Lane, Northington, argued the installation will destroy the character of the rural community during its construction, due to noise, traffic and visual impacts. Mr. LeBrox wrote, "A substantial and lengthy civil engineering project will destroy that character during construction and adversely affect it during operation. The logic of this project seems dubious, given the alternative measures being built elsewhere to secure the necessary water supply. The public consultation started on March the 31st and goes on until Friday, May the 12th.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Cathedral crowds gather for Palm Sunday procession. Scores of people took part in the annual Palm Sunday procession in Winchester. The procession, on a grey and cold morning, started outside the Great Hall shortly after 10 a.m. and followed a route down the High Street, turning right at the Buttercross, before making its way into the cathedral. The procession was accompanied by palms, hymns and Dermot the Donkey, who joined those in attendance from Kelly's Donkeys for the second year in a row. It included the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, the Reverend Canon Missioner Dr. Tess Queen Lawton, the Reverend Canon Andy Trenier, among other cathedral dignitaries and choristers. Before the procession started, the Dean stood on steps outside the Great Hall and said, "Dear friends in Christ, during Lent we have been preparing by works of love and self-sacrifice for the celebration of our Lord's death and resurrection. Today we come together to begin this celebration in joyful union with the Church throughout the world. Christ enters his own city to complete the work as our Saviour, to be welcomed as a King, to suffer, to die, and to rise again. Let us go with him now, so that united with him in this journey, we may share in his sorrows and know his risen life." After this, the Dean invited people gathered to hold up their palm crosses during a prayer. The procession made its way through the Westgate, down the High Street, right at the Buttercross, before approaching and entering the cathedral for the remainder of the service. Palm Sunday marks the beginning of Holy Week and commemorates Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, welcomed by the people waving palm branches. And there's lovely pictures, one of the Dean outside the Great Hall with a lot of choir people and Dermot the Donkey greeting her. And then there's another picture of Dermot the Donkey being led along towards the cathedral. I think Dermot the Donkey looks quite interested in all this.
Okay, let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is lunchtime concerts to showcase young talent. A series of concerts providing scores of Hampshire students with a performance platform is set to begin in Winchester in the coming weeks. The Brothers of the Hospital of St Cross, led by organist Brother Graham Davies, are running a series of 28 lunchtime concerts this year titled Perfect Pitch at St Cross Chapel. Beginning on April the 20th at 12:30 p.m, the series will run each Thursday until October the 26th. Students from educational establishments taking part include St Swithin's, Peter Simmons, King's, the Hampshire Youth Orchestra, Pilgrims, Twyford, St Faith's, University of Winchester and the Royal Academy of Music. Mr Davies said, "The principal reason for doing this is to provide young music students to give them an opportunity to do a public performance. A lot of these performers won't get this chance outside of school, and it looks good on their CV. It's also a beautiful place to perform. I'm very keen that the community of St Cross connects with the city through outreach. Sadly, there are many people in Winchester who barely know about St Cross, so it can feel like a closed community, and I want to reverse that and make it more widely known. We're not going to sleep on the edge of the city." Supporting the events are patrons Nigel Atkinson, Lady Mary Fagan and Commodore Jonathan Cook, Chair of the Trustees of the Hospital of St Cross. The Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, said, "A weekly lunchtime concert involving young people from Winchester and further afield is incredibly appealing and will attract a good deal of local attention. Admission is free, and the first concert on April the 20th is raising money for Ukrainian charities. The opening event will feature singers, dancers and instrumentalists dressed in their colourful national costumes. Performers include the Kalina Choir, led by Olena Batovska, the Children's Group, led by Lala Smaglova, The accordion player Volodymyr Vasilenko, accompanied by Margarita Dorosh, in addition to dance choreography by Anna Paniatova. The second Pitch Perfect concert on April the 27th will feature 20-year-old prize-winning pianist Chenyu Wang from the Royal Academy of Music. Winchester University students will make their lunchtime concerts debut on May the 18th and 4th. The Royal Academy of Music violinist Johan Octavian takes the stage on May the 11th, while the Twyford School Senior Choir will perform on May the 25th. No booking is required. For more information, contact Graham Davies at gldavies.organist@gmail.com. And this is accompanied by a beautiful photograph of the chapel of the Hospital of St. Cross, where the concerts will be taking place, and which has apparently the best acoustics in the country, it has been said, and a wonderful photograph of the enormous pond in the gardens outside, which you can also wander round after the concert. Some photographs of some Ukrainians in their wonderful costumes doing a little dance, and two of the young musicians who will be playing there. And it hasn't actually mentioned, but there will be some sort of food and drinks in the available in the 100 Men's Hall at the same time.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor. And then we've got Bulgarum Diary, letter from Westminster, and we've got first person and editorial comment. And we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Fairless, Colin Fairless, peacefully aged 84. Green, Christy, Margaret and Maggie Green, suddenly aged 89. Guppy, Vivian Viv Kenneth Guppy, peacefully at home, aged 98. Judd, Anthony Judd, aged 87. Marsh, Maureen Marsh, aged 91. Neil, Emily Grace Neil, MBE of North Borehunt, quietly at Three Oaks Care Home, aged 98. Newt, Peter Michael Hensel Newt, aged 73. Pavia, Marion Elizabeth Pavia, peacefully. And finally, Vane, Geoffrey Allen Vane, peacefully at Winchester Hospice. It's time for Heather with Christian comment.
And Rosemary Baker writes about responding to the repetition. There's something about having a date in the diary on a comparatively free week that means it's bound to fill up, and indeed maybe even clash. I've noticed this before. It often seems to happen when I'm due to write the Christian comment column. So I found myself with three tasks: writing an Easter service to include a sermon to be distributed online and by printing and delivery for the Southampton Methodist circuit, preparing a Good Friday service with hymns and readings to take in person at King Sombon the Methodist Church, and this column to be published on the Thursday before. At first, these tasks might appear to be all about the same subject matter, but the timings and tenses need to be carefully planned so that they appear in the right order, or if ahead, make this clear. Now, the fact that they refer to events that originally happened a long time ago but are being celebrated in the present just adds to the possible things that can go wrong. I've had further difficulties in that I haven't taken a service in person since before the COVID lockdown, and most of my resources are in storage. This has caused me a lot of angst with worries about, was I using too many old-fashioned hymns, and should I be trying out some new material, for example, a drama, to get the message across. As I agonised about my choices, the postman bought the Radio Times. I thought I'd give myself a break. And I was amazed to read an article by Stephen Cottrell, the Archbishop of York, about watching a repeat of a film called Groundhog Day, This film's about a day in the life of a weatherman. It keeps repeating over and over again. In the end, he sees the point in this repetition, that although he can't change the day itself, he can change the way he reacts to it. The Archbishop likened this to religious services that are in fact mostly some form of repeats, but he goes on to point out the merits of this and why it's important. Wow, a reprieve. I can stop agonising and just choose the well-known hymns and stick to the simple repeat formula of worship I was brought up with. King Somborne will be having the old rugged cross and when I survey the wondrous cross. The Archbishop says that the worship of the Church works in a similar way. The repetition of our worship, prayers, hymns and scripture teach us how to respond well to life and live the best way we can. Patterns of repeat help us focus and see the same old things in a new way. That's true of showing old films, and it's true of Easter.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 7 letters this week, and Noel will start with one.
Yes, a letter from Andrea Owen, headed Tory Ducks. Your correspondent, Martin Simpson, Chronicle, March the 30th, appears to be in a flap about whether or not Mr. Brine is a true Tory. He uses the analogy of the duck. The problem is that not all ducks quack. Some do quack, like our mallard, but some whistle, like the widgeon, a winter migrant to the UK, and some are rather silent, like the harlequin, who prefers not to come here. Nor do they all look the same or feed in the same way. Some dabble and others dive for their food. The differences are substantial. Just like the Tory party, one might say. Or indeed, to be impartial, Labour. It appears that Mr. Simpson regards Steve Brine as an un-Tory duck. But what worries me is that maybe he is a lame duck. We have heard little from him recently on major issues, in particular reports about the huge amounts of taxpayers' money which the government is spending on agency staff to make up for shortfalls in NHS staffing, while refusing to pay our own nurses and doctors a competitive salary to keep them working for the NHS. Perhaps Mr. Simpson prefers us to keep the NHS woefully short of trained staff in the interest of a small state. What possible benefit can there be in lining the pockets of middlemen? By default, or is it deliberately, the government is running down the NHS, making it not fit for purpose. In his capacity as the chair of the Health and Social Care Committee, this is something Mr. Brine should be fighting against and calling ministers to account. We need someone to stand up against this woeful waste. Would it be a bigger vote winner for the Tories than dreaming of flights to Rwanda and pursuing strange myths of wokeness and cultural identity? Who knows? There are as many shades of Toryism as there are colours and sounds in ducks, but from my observation, one thing which all ducks do is keep their heads down while keeping an eye out for trouble. Perhaps in that respect, the duck analogy is appropriate. Why is Mr. Brine keeping his head down at the moment? Andrea Owen, Calverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And Mike Elks writes, Language danger. Jessica Gottlieb's letter, Chronicle, March the 16th, highlights how the use of incendiary language, which has become common usage by many of our public figures, exerts real influence and consequences for society. When leading politicians like Suella Braverman and influential journalists like Jeremy Clarkson use divisive language, which is then repeated ad nauseam in the media, it influences people and normalises such behaviour and attitudes. This divides us and erodes the value of trust in our inclusive democracy. As long ago as 2015, the UN warned the UK about the rise in hate language in app media, especially in the tabloid press. They explicitly reminded the government that this was the path down which Germany travelled in the early 1930s and warned of the dangers. When Gary Lineker recently tweeted the same warning, he was immediately attacked and strenuous efforts were made to silence him. That is why the incidents of hooligans racially targeting the tailor in King's Walk and Jessica's experience of hearing anti-Semitism in Jury Street are so shocking. They show how even in a city such as Winchester we must actively guard against these sentiments, which are divisive and so disrespectful to our neighbours. And that was from Mike Elks, Alsford Road, Winchester.
St. Giles Hill Trees, Mike Biden writes. Mary Pearson, in the letters of March the 30th in the Chronicle, raises concerns about the plans for the trees on St. Giles's Hill. Given recent events in Plymouth and Sheffield, she has reason to be fearful. But fortunately, we are in Winchester, and such devastation as seen there is not what is proposed. There are 800 trees on the hill, and today they are a very important part of the landscape setting of the city. The new management plan recognises this and gives it full weight. Only 5% of the trees need to be felled, largely because of ash dieback and other diseases. For every tree felled, a new one will be planted. The City Council understands the importance of trees and has published a tree strategy, which can be found on their website. Its recommendations and policies lie at the heart of the new plan. One of its goals is to preserve and extend the life of the oldest trees. Several years ago, it was decided to fell the old limes either side of the path leading from the square to the cathedral. Some were decaying and becoming dangerous, and there was an outcry. But this had been done, and had to be done, so that young trees could be planted as replacements. And today, those trees already form an impressive avenue. Few now doubt that it was the right decision. However, in a mixed woodland setting such as St. Giles, there's a constant cycle of old trees dying and being replaced by new growth. In a park, for reasons of safety, it is necessary to manage that process. There is a little catching up to do, but the character will not change. Once the Friends of St. Giles's Park charity is registered and active, we hope to organise a survey of people's experiences and opinions, and hope many residents, like Mary, who care about St. Giles's Hill, will participate. In the meantime, anyone interested in the park is invited to email us, so we may keep them updated. Mike Biden, Secretary, Friends of St. Giles's Park, Winchester.
And here's another letter on the same subject from Charles Ratcliffe, City Councillor. Mary Pearson is understandably concerned by reports that many trees are to be felled on St. Giles Hill under a new City Council plan for the Hilltop Park, Chronicle Letters Online, March 27th. For the record, the plan envisaged only 40 trees being felled, all of them dead or diseased as a result of ash dieback. 40 new trees will be planted elsewhere in the park. Less invasive tree work is also planned for up to 500 other trees at the site, mainly removal of dead branches, stripping ivy and other minor remedial works. The result will be a healthier and more diverse tree stock, with some subtle opening up of the iconic views from the park and no impact on the landscape backdrop the hill provides to the city below. The five-year plan for St. Giles Hill, developed by the City Council, which also includes other improvements, offers a chance to stop and reverse the decline of this wonderful park, which has sadly been neglected for far too long. And that's Charles Ratcliffe, City Councillor, Parchment Street, Winchester.
And yet another rather different article or letter from Dr. Harry Mycock, but also about St. Giles's Hill. A miracle or a power of the press? Several weeks ago, you published my letter about the potholes in Quarry Road, which last September were marked out by white lines, giving hope of repair sometime soon. Then, alas, those lines of hope of repair faded to naught by March. Not even white lines of hope anymore. As the holes deepened in the March rains, I contemplated fencing some of them off to save further vehicle damage, or worse still, injury. Filled with a decent bit of topsoil, I thought potatoes might be a decent crop in some of the potholes too. I can now report that on Monday last week, the lines suddenly reappeared, sprayed by some unseen hand. Furthermore, by the end of the day, the potholes were repaired and topped off with striking yellow lines resplendent amid the otherwise faded and lost such yellow lines along the rest of the road. I like to think this is the power of the press rather than a coincidence or a miracle. And that was from Dr. Harry Mycock, Quarry Road, St. Giles's Hill, Winchester, and is accompanied by two photos, one of the original pothole, which occurs all around Winchester, and this one is full of muddy water and has remains of the white line showing round it. And the other is of the repaired pothole, a lovely flat tarmac surface that you can cycle over safely with a bright yellow line down near the edge of the road, even if the line doesn't last that long.
Lack of action, writes Jane Rutter. I have today, April the 3rd, sent a letter to Councillor Nick Adams-King, the Hampshire County Council Cabinet Member for Highways. The County Council needs to get serious about urgent action on the Cart and Horses Junction. The Conservative councillor made big promises, but is now refusing to do anything. He needs to act. At the public demonstration outside the Hampshire County Council offices in November, where a deputation asking for action now to make the Cart and Horses Junction safer, Councillor Adam King agreed to meet with myself and fellow city councillors to discuss these serious issues. He is now refusing to meet with us. He publicly agreed to put in place urgently interim safety measures at the junction. Nothing has happened. He agreed to work with the National Highways to sort out the junction, but we understand that we'll have to wait until at least 2027 for these changes, as yet unclear, to be undertaken. Do people across Winchester, the Worthies and the Itchen Valley really have to wait another 4 years? This is just not good enough. How many more accidents will there be, with how many injuries and even more deaths, before Hampshire County Council actually takes some action to make the Cart and Horses Junction safer? Jane Rutter, Winchester City Councillor, Bedfield Lane, Headbourne Worthy.
And here's a slightly alternative view of the NHS from Karen McCleary, called NHS Despair. Two letters in last week's Chronicle echo my thoughts on the current state of the NHS, namely that the individual staff are pleasant, work hard and do their best, but often the creaking administrative systems destroy their best efforts. In my own case, I saw a consultant in Winchester in early February this year who said she would refer me to the physiotherapy team for treatment. She told me there may be a small delay of about 6 weeks. Last week, 8 weeks later, I telephoned the physiotherapy department to make sure my appointment had not got lost in the system. A polite lady receptionist assured me I was on the system and that she could now make an appointment, the earliest being mid-May, now 15 weeks after my initial consultant referral. If this was a short delay, heaven help us if we have to wait for a long delay. I was also told that this appointment would be a phone appointment. When I queried the value of this, I was told that it was so that the physiotherapist could get a general feel for the situation. My observation that a good feel for the situation had been clearly written up in my consultant's referral letter fell on stony ground. I suspect the telephone consultation ticks a box and pushes the problem further down the road. I wonder how long a subsequent appointment for some hands-on treatment will take. In a first-world economy, this situation is not good enough and would be farcical if not deeply worrying. The NHS gets billions from the public purse. Surely it is not beyond the wit and capabilities of the local NHS management to get sclerotic systems improved and patient throughout speeded up for better care. I know I'm not the only person to have had to wait weeks for an appointment. Everyone I have spoken to has similar experience. And I write as a retired nurse with some 45 years of experience under my belt, and I despair that the NHS has come to this. Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
And that was the last letter to the editor that we've got for this week. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. And now it's time for Jane again with an alternative look at the news, because she's got Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum has, as usual, two different articles. The first is Students Show Their Skills. Film students from the University of Winchester have been recruited by a new festival to help with promotions. Four students attended the launch of Winchester Books Festival to create a video for the inaugural event and gain some real-world experience. The university is sponsoring the festival and hosting some of the talks from April the 21st to the 23rd, in addition to the launch on March the 2nd when tickets went live. Budding film and media students Isabel Hood, Jack Robinson, Becca Lane and Tamo Fouad hope to continue the collaboration and cover some of the talks and workshops across the three-day festival. Isabel, 22, said, "It was great working for the Books Festival team and attending the launch event. We're looking forward to the festival and seeing all the events. Having opportunities like this is really great for us as young filmmakers and we are really grateful." Jack, 21, said, "I'm personally really proud to be working with the Book Festival team on this. It's a fantastic event for the Winchester community." Tickets are being sold through Play to the Crowd. To go to winchesterbooksfestival.com. And the second little article is Happy Couples 60 Years Together. A local couple recently celebrated their diamond wedding anniversary at the chapel where they first married. Peter Smith married Hilary in the first wedding ceremony to take place at New Farm Chapel, Alsford, on March the 30th, 1963. In the 60 years since, they have remained in Hampshire, with Peter serving Basingstoke as a dental technician and Hilary caring for their home and family. Together they raised four children and their family eventually grew to 14 grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. They celebrated their long and happy marriage surrounded by friends and family. And this is of course accompanied by a photograph of Peter and Hilary Smith looking very happy on their wedding day in a traditional white dress with a big white headdress and a flower in Peter's coat.
It's over to Heather now, because she's got a letter from Westminster.
And this comes from Flick Drummond, who is the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley. The illegal migration bill continues to make its way through Parliament. I support action to stop people traffickers bringing migrants across the Channel in small boats. It is dangerous, and it's funding organised crime. I know action to tackle this is also popular with people in this country. However, I signed some amendments to make sure that there are more safe routes outside the four that exist at present for those who are escaping persecution: Ukraine, Hong Kong, Syria and Afghanistan. In particular, I would like Iran to be added to the list. I'm also concerned about children with or without their families. The government has agreed to consider these amendments at the report stage of the bill, and I will continue to make the case for them, both in Parliament and in discussions with ministers, as the bill makes its way through both houses. We must break the business model of the people smugglers and stop the dangerous journey, because 56 people died last year. However, we must not forget that there are responsibilities the United Kingdom has signed up to under international law. There is a balance, as ever, to be struck around being a place of refuge and honouring our international commitments and stopping those who come here illegally. I will be working with the government to ensure that balance is correctly struck. In the meantime, we need to speed up the processing of applicants so that it is no longer worth spending £5,000 or more to come over in an overcrowded boat only to spend a few weeks in a military camp and then be sent back because there is no right to be here. I'm disappointed teachers have rejected a pay offer from the government and they will continue to strike. They were offered a £1,000 one-off payment for this year and a 4.3% rise next year. In addition, starting salaries would also rise to £30,000 from this September. With inflation forecast to fall dramatically this year to under 3%, I do not think it is a good deal. I beg your pardon. With inflation forecast to fall dramatically this year to under 3%, I do think this is a good deal when we consider the public finances. Teachers received a 5% increase in pay in 2022. The Education Secretary has said pay will now be decided by the Independent Pay Review Body, which means the £1,000 payment for this year will not happen. It's a shame, as I think it should remain on the table while negotiations continue. I very much value teachers, but an above-inflation pay rise cannot happen in the present economic climate. I sit on the Education Select Committee, and last month it looked at special needs education. There are not enough teachers specialising in this area, and I would like to see every teacher have some training on how to work with special needs children and to recognise autism. The all-party group on women and work I chair has had its AGM recently. Every year we publish a report with recommendations to government about the barriers to women in the workplace. Over the next year we are going to look at the issues of each decade of a woman's life and aim towards contributing to election manifestos with policy recommendations. It's going to be a packed agenda. If anyone would like to contribute, please get in touch.
Now, this week's first person is by George Hayter, and Noel's going to read it.
I am, and it's headed Running Out of Time to Change, and it's actually a piece after my own heart. Anyway, when people gather for any kind of productive meeting, there always seems to be someone who interrupts the proceedings by arriving late. That's usually me. I'm one of those lamentable people who will not be dictated to by clocks. This selfish attitude holds up everyone else, causing inconvenience and annoyance. I'm afraid people like me slow Britain down. We hamper the nation's productivity. My being late all the time has caused me endless self-imposed dismay in terms of missing trains, getting the worst cinema seats, and turning up for job interviews out of breath and horribly sweaty. Always setting out late, I endure terrible stress when slowed down by congestion on the M3. I blame my education. My parents sent me to a boarding school where pupils had to attend breakfast at 7:40. We were supposed to get up when a bell rang at 7:10. But all us lazy lads ignored that bell, rising only when we heard the 7:30 bell. That left us with less than 10 minutes to be sitting at a table in a dining hall 10 minutes away. So we had to run, chaotically pulling our clothes on as we went and arriving late. Peer pressure ensured that no one dared get up as instructed at 7:10. New boys soon learned to take off their vest, shirt and jumper in one unit each night, ready assembled for a rapid pull-on in one piece in the morning, complete with loosened tie and the collar. The routine nurtured pride in lateness. It was a lifetime training in procrastination. Normal people will be astonished that laggards like me deliberately get behind schedule to get things done. It works like this. When the time approaches for a rendezvous or other appointment that we laggards have arranged, we move into top gear, quickly performing important tasks that we have put off for ages. When I have arranged an imminent rendezvous, I can do more in 10 minutes than I have done in the previous 10 hours. tidying, phoning, flossing teeth, putting on washing, making a start on this column. Such daunting tasks are achieved in a whirlwind before running out of the front door. It's not nice to use people by making them wait for me while I perform tasks that I was too lazy to perform without the kick up the what's-it of knowing they will be waiting for me. An unpunctual friend of mine has a different motivation. He seems to be addicted to the adrenaline he gets from being in a hurry brought on by lateness. I've been with him when he has told me he has an imminent appointment, yet he kept talking as the minutes ticked away. While repeatedly mentioning his ever more imminent next rendezvous, he repeatedly introduced new topics and entertaining diversions to keep me entertained before his objective was achieved. He had made himself hopelessly late. Only then did he rush off. My own lateness is rooted in fear. It may be fear of getting to where I'm supposed to be, such as a dismal DIY store or the home of a difficult relative, or more likely, I have fallen behind schedule through fear of embarking on a terrifying chore, such as filling in a tax form. Sometimes I may have instead chosen a less demanding activity, such as making a cup of tea, surfing the net, or looking out of the window. Making to-do lists is another reliable lateness generation, especially when joined by indecision about which to do first, coupled with not wanting to do any of them first. To anyone who recognises their own behaviour in the lateness I have described, I would suggest that they make an effort to do things more promptly. Of course, it's high time I myself made an effort to become a punctual person. But I fear I'm too old to change. I've left it too late.
Time for editorial comment. So over to you, Jane.
Which is the looming battle over new pipeline. There was a time when few people gave much thought to the environment, natural or otherwise. Only since World War II have a large number of people objected to major changes, whether in towns or countryside. Organisations such as the Winchester Preservation Trust, now the City of Winchester Trust in towns, or the CPRE in rural areas. Now there are millions of people who give a lot of thought to such things. Our front page story shows how major disputes evolve between interested parties. Southern Water wants to lay a pipeline to carry water across the Itchen Valley to strengthen resilience in these days of climate crisis. Within days of public consultation starting, objections have been received on environmental grounds, with opponents including Lord Ashburton stating it will harm the flora and fauna of the valley, one of the jewels in Hampshire's, if not England's, crown. Keeping everyone happy over this scheme is going to be very difficult, if not impossible. But this is the future. The country is coming under increasing environmental stress, and attempts to combat it will spark more opposition.
Look at lighting up times. Okay, on Friday the 7th of April, it ends at 6:29 a.m. and begins at 4:35 p.m. And on Wednesday the 12th of April, it ends at 6:18 a.m. and it begins at 7:48 p.m. Let's look at a local event at the Winchester Cathedral. There's a touch tour for blind and partially sighted visitors. The cathedral now provides pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour will provide with you a history of the building and the stories of some of those who worked here or who were buried in the cathedral. There will be opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral. Also, you'll be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. These tours will take a little over an hour, and afterwards you'll be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there are also many exhibits which you can touch. The next tours will be on Monday the 17th of April at 2:30 p.m, Friday the 9th of June at 2:30 p.m, and Monday the 17th of July at 11:30 a.m. If any group of up to three visually impaired people would like a tour on another date, please call the number below, which I shall read in a minute. There are two ways to book. You can ring the visitors' services team on 01962 857 275, or if you are able to use the internet, you can email visits@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. We're now going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
It's in response to this water company's application to build more pipework that you had in one of the headlines. Signs appear warning of river sewage spills, and there's bright yellow signs, they've probably been taken down by now, that have been put up around Winchester's waterways, saying about the spills and the sewage and the generally poor quality. A marine conservation charity has slammed Southern Water for polluting rivers in Winchester ahead of the company's plan to combat overflowing sewage. Members of Extinction Rebellion have pinned bright yellow warning signs by rivers around the city to draw attention to the amount of sewage and other pollutants being released into the water. The signs, spotted in North Walls Recreation Ground, the Weirs and Winnell Moors, read, "Warning, toxic water brought to you by Southern Water. Shocking and wholesale disregard of delicate ecosystems, the environment, coastlines and human health," says Mr. Justice Johnson, the Southern Water prosecutor in 2021. And the sign then lists figures for the number of illegal discharges. 8,400 illegal discharges. 6,979 illegal spills. 61,700 hours of releases of pollutants. And 21 billion litres of raw sewage. A spokesperson for Southern Water said the sign refers to events that took place between 2010 and 2015 at a number of wastewater treatment works in the coastal area. A £90 million fine was paid by Southern Water's shareholders. Not a penny was contributed by customers. Resident Jez Hunter first saw the signs on Sunday, April the 2nd. Posting on the Facebook page Winchester Rants, he said, "Anyone else seen these yellow signs that seem to have popped up along the river today? I think they're brilliant. It is horrendous what these water companies are getting away with, and great that someone is drawing more attention to it and linking it to Southern Water." The action preceded proposals by the Water Services Regulation Authority, Ofwat, on Tuesday, April the 4th, that Southern Water reduce the use of storm overflows and expand its nature-based and engineering solutions. The water company said it agrees with its customers that releasing sewage into the environment during heavy rainfall is an unacceptable way to prevent homes from being flooded. The plan would see Southern Water invest up to £50 million more by spring 2025 into three key areas, including the harbours and South Downs areas of Hampshire and West Sussex. Southern Water Chief Executive Lawrence Gosden said, "Reducing the use of storm overflows and their impact on water quality is a priority for me. To do this, we have to get the root of a problem and reduce the amount of surface water entering the sewerage system. The opportunity to accelerate or our rollout of the innovative and sustainable drainage solutions we have already piloted is a positive opportunity, and these have been proven to help reduce volumes of surface water, stop sewage spills, and bring nature back to communities."
E-scooter hit and run shock. A Winchester business owner was in shock after being hit by a woman riding an e-scooter in the high street. Steve Lucas, 44, who walked away with only minor injuries, says he is relieved that an elderly person or child wasn't involved in the crash. Mr. Lucas was hit from behind by a woman, believed to be in her 50s, who was illegally riding her e-scooter when she lost control around 3:40 p.m. on Tuesday, March the 7th. The victim was sent flying outside NatWest Bank. Steve said, "I heard something coming, and a split second later there was a bang on my back and I hit the floor. I thought I'd broken my shoulder. I turned around and saw the person who hit me also on the floor." The rider sheepishly said sorry. Then after I took a photo of her and said I was calling the police, she got up and sped away down the high street in the Guildhall direction. Essentially, it was a hit and run. I was surprised by her age. It was a proper whack that sent me flying, and I'm absolutely amazed that I didn't break anything. I was heavily bruised, but more surprised that I'd been hit and was okay, and shocked that she disappeared. If she hit someone else, it could have been different. I want people to be educated that e-scooters aren't legal in public places, and motorised vehicles are not safe in pedestrian areas. If they legislated, then I'd probably look at getting one myself, but the right laws need to be in place. They're a great thing, but only for cycle routes and roads. Steve's rucksack cushioned the blow, but the businessman said he took 2 weeks to process what had happened to him. A spokesman for Hampshire Police said they are not releasing any images at this time, and officers haven't indicated any similar incidents in Winchester. Anyone with information on the crash should call 101, quoting the incident number 44230092860. I shall repeat that. 44230092860. Steve has shared his experience on the Facebook group Winchester Rants, advising the culprit to put the thing away, because next time they might hit someone who is less fit and resilient. E-scooters are only permitted on private land with the permission of the landowner.
And here we have popular cleric transformed city churches. Farewell to much-loved man of God. In February, the Reverend Canon Peter Seal, a much-loved figure in Winchester, died at the age of 65 after a short illness. It was only 18 months ago that a packed congregation at St. Paul's Church bade an emotional farewell to him on his retirement as rector. His Building for Life project will be one of his great legacies, involving the transformation of both St. Matthew's and St. Paul's churches. A visitor to St. Paul's today will see a redesigned altar, an intimate prayer chapel, and a glorious nave with oak and patterned stone floor. A new gallery with a glass-fronted meeting room weaves between the Victorian pillars, effortlessly combining new and old. The space is invitational and spiritual, a physical metaphor for Peter himself, who referred to his churches as having soft edges, welcoming all comers. After studying theology at the University of Exeter and training for ordination at Lincoln Theological College, Peter started his ministry in 1983 at Lady St. Mary Wareham, where he was curate. More recently, he was chaplain of King Alfred's College, now the University of Winchester, where he is still remembered as a kind and open pastor who encouraged students to go beyond themselves in helping others. In 1991, he became vicar of St. Luke's Stanmore, and finally rector at St. Matthew with St. Paul in 2001. He was a foundation school governor for 31 years, probably a record, rural dean, chaplain to St. Peter St. Simon's College, and a member of Winchester Cathedral, among other roles. Peter's life was centred on prayer. When he celebrated Eucharist, you knew that you were near someone very close to God. This was also evident in his unrelenting pastoral kindness to those to whom he ministered. Among Peter's interests was walking, especially if combined with a pint of beer and a pub lunch. Later in life, he became passionate about green issues. Peter was a true pilgrim, never short of friends to accompany him. Peter once said, "Heaven is the place, praise be, where every boundary will be blown apart, and all that God ever imagined we might be will find its fulfilment." Peter's congregations imagine Peter in just such a state of fulfilment. Peter's family meant the world to him, and his retirement in Wareham was an opportunity to be closer to them. He leaves behind him his wife Julia, daughter Katie, son Philip, and daughter-in-law Sarah. And this is accompanied by some lovely photographs, both of Peter in the pulpit, still beaming and looking friendly and encouraging, having a laugh, it says, in which he's clearly involved in some sort of play with a clown in brightly coloured costumes, and also out in his shorts on a walk with a walking group, walking through the woods again with a big beam on his face.
And over to Heather.
Ukraine jazz musician joins up with students. An esteemed jazz accordionist from Ukraine joined students for their spring showcase to keep fundraising for his country. The University of Winchester hosted virtuoso accordionist Volodymyr Vasilenko at the chapel on campus for the Music Centre's Spring Cabaret last Wednesday. Volodymyr's former host, Stella Thurston, set up the partnership to help the accordionist keep performing in order to raise money and to allow him to stay with his family in Winchester. The programme also featured solo and group performances by the students, providing them with the opportunity to try something new without the pressure of assessment or a large audience. Opening the show was the University Folk Band, alongside Volodymyr, one of only five virtuoso accordionists in Ukraine. Among the mix of theatre classics and original songs from guitarist Alex Jeffrey was a performance by student Jingyu Zhao on the Gushgen, otherwise known as the Chinese zither. Volodymyr brought the evening to a close with a fast-paced set of Ukrainian pieces before a final and more familiar tune of Someday My Prince Will Come, accompanied by pianist Adam Bloss and Ukrainian guitarist Natalia Sorokina. University music director Neil Valentine said Volodymyr is fabulous. He's absolutely ridiculous, plays with such expression. We're looking for more opportunities for him to play with us in the next academic year and at a City of Sanctuary event in June. It is so important the students have the chance to express themselves and try something new in a safe space. Musical theatre student Rachel Fisher said, "I've done pretty much all the cabaret since I started here. It's a good experience for us, but it's also such a nice, relaxing vibe with a small audience. It's nice to perform without the massive pressure of exams, too." The evening was in aid of the International Medical Corps, with audience members, whether watching online or in person, being encouraged to donate. The accordionist persuaded the Ukrainian authorities to allow him to move in with his wife and six-year-old son after 10 months apart because of his fundraising efforts for the country. Volodymyr said, "He's aged 39. I'm grateful to the university to have been welcomed to be a part of it. I hope this will become a bridge to something more. I'm delighted that we are increasing the profile of Ukrainian music and hopefully raising some money too." Volodymyr's supporter and former host, Stella Thurston, said, "It's a demonstration of how many barriers can be broken down through music."
£250,000 lifeline to tackle toxic threat to museum. A Hampshire attraction has been awarded £246,000 that grant that aims to eliminate a potential threat to its future. Money allocated by Historic England will prevent a large kiln at the Grade 2 listed Burzell and Brickworks Museum from suffering further decay and becoming unsafe. The building's asbestos roof will be replaced with corrugated fibre cement sheeting and translucent roof lights. Marion Brinton, Historic England Partnership's team leader, said, "The kiln is a key element of the museum. If it had become unsafe, or even lost through decay, the whole future of the museum would have been in jeopardy. The museum does great work with local schools and volunteers, so we are pleased to give support and help create a sustainable future. Caroline Hayes, the museum's director, added, "We've been watching the old roof rapidly deteriorate over the last 10 years and hoping we would be able to replace it before it finally failed. Luckily, with the help of Historic England, this has now been made possible and the kiln is being given a new lease of life. We're very grateful for their support, as finding the funds to undertake repairs such as this is challenging." Repairs to the kiln are part of a wider project to improve public access to the museum. Two drying sheds are set to be transformed into offices for business SATA units. The aim is to ensure historic parts of the site are upgraded so they can be removed from the Heritage at Risk register. Plans to replace the kiln's roof were approved by Fareham Borough Council last year. A heritage statement that accompanied the application said the site helped revolutionise the process of brickmaking. Not only was the manufacture of bricks mechanised, but they also patented a method of drying bricks, which meant large quantities could be manufactured all year round. The museum, which celebrated its 125th anniversary last year, reopens to the public on Sunday after its winter break. The Grade 2 listed complex at Cole Park Lane, Swanwick, was built by Robert and Edward Ashby in 1897. The museum, which celebrated its 125th anniversary last year, reopens to the public on Sunday after its winter break. The Grade 2 listed complex at Cole Park Lane, Swanwick, was built by Robert and Edward Ashby in 1897 and is the only remaining steam-driven brickworks in the UK. Described as nationally important, it holds the country's largest collection of bricks and brickmaking artefacts. In its heyday, the site produced around 20 million bricks a year, many of which were used in the construction of buildings in the Southampton area.
And here we have Couples Coffee Van Going Down a Treat. A couple who set up their own vintage coffee van have now found a new base at the Recreation Ground in Winchester. Kiana Tolo and her partner, Daryl Jeff, launched Kiki T's Vintage Coffee Van 6 months ago, catering at events in Hampshire, Surrey and West Sussex. Now, the striking yellow 1976 Citroen, nicknamed Betty Bumble after Kiana's nan, has a regular home within Northwall's Recreation Ground. The couple, who met travelling in Australia and now live in Liphook, were approached by Winchester City Council to move into the space as a trial to see whether there is demand for a cafe ahead of the River Park development. Full-time firefighter Daryl, 31, said, "Well, we're essentially a guinea pig to see if a cafe would fit in here. We haven't been blown out of the water with visitors yet, as lots of people don't know we're here. But the reception has been super warm. We'd love to be here all the time permanently if we get enough people coming. It's been tough with rising costs, but people tend to find the money for coffee and cake, as it's a small treat and we get people stopping on their way to work." Kiana, 29, who continues to juggle other jobs alongside the coffee van, said, "People have said it's the one thing this park needed. On our first day, everyone was so happy to see us and they were taking photos. We're pretty happy with how the business is going so far. It's definitely building and people are approaching us for event bookings more." Daryl added, "We bought the van as we wanted to start our own business and be in charge of our own fate. We love the coffee, cake and socialising outside vibe that was commonplace in Australia. We love the social aspect of the business and just being outside, really. The more nature-based and rural we can be, the better. So we love the ducks and swans in the park. It's a fantastic meeting place for all to come and relax, grab a coffee and a bit of cake and meet with friends and family. The vintage Citroen is fully operational, with the pair driving it to events such as weddings, parties, markets, and now the recreation ground. Kiana hopes to make the coffee van her full-time job, with the couple having ambitions to find a permanent home and potentially open more vans in the future. The trained baristas source their medium roast coffee from Roasted in West Sussex and use a fair trade Blue Mountain blend. Kiki Teas has varying open hours, but is usually open 7:30 to 4 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday and Friday, and 8:30 to 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday.
Currys is to close. Currys in Winnell will be closing its doors for good in May. The shop, which sells electrical products in the Moorside Road retail park, will close for the last time on Saturday, May the 13th. A member of staff confirmed that the branch is closing as it is no longer economically viable after the landlord increased the rent. The retail park is currently owned by real estate developer The Hargaze Group, which purchased the site in 2019. The news has sparked complaints on social media, with people pointing out the nearest Currys store would be at Hedge End, more than 10 miles away. It sells numerous household items, including washing machines, fridges, laptops, TVs and games consoles. A spokesperson from Currys said our Winchester store will be closing on May the 13th as the lease comes to an end, and we continue our focus on retail park stores where we can offer our customers the widest possible range. We've had discussions with all the colleagues impacted by this decision, and they have been offered roles in our neighbouring stores.
Suicide Major felt humiliated. The former head of the Royal Marines died by suicide after experiencing substantial stress, an inquest has concluded. Major General Matthew Holmes, 54, was found in a bedroom at his home in Kingsgate Road, Winchester, on October the 2nd, 2021, the inquest heard. The hearing was told that in the months before his death, Major General Holmes had lost his position as leader of the Royal Marines in a management restructuring, faced the collapse of his marriage, and had been left angry at the UK's withdrawal from Afghanistan. During the inquest, his widow Leah gave evidence. She said that Fleet Commander Vice Admiral Gerry Kidd had told Major General Holmes to agree to the restructuring in which he would lose his role or resign. He was told he had to sign or agree to resign, she said, adding that her husband found the experience hugely humiliating. She told the inquest they had taken a family holiday in August 2021, which coincided with the British and American withdrawal from Afghanistan. This holiday was worse than any other family holiday, and there was the Afghanistan withdrawal. He was very preoccupied with that. He was getting messages from really distressed people and trying to do something about it. We decided to leave the holiday slightly early. On the last morning, Matt said to me, "That's it, we're done." Once they came back home, she said Major General Holmes became reluctant to discuss their separation. Then, in September the 14th, 2021, weeks before he died, she found him sitting on their bed with a shotgun beside him. "I said, what do you think you're doing?" she told the hearing. "I was concerned that he was in this way, and I was also concerned that our daughter was in the next room." He said something along the lines, "My life is not worth living without my family." The inquest was told Hampshire Constabulary officers visited the home in September 22nd to remove the shotgun. Major General Holmes's sister, Sarah Atkins, said this prompted a conversation among family about his mental health. He said he did not think it was necessary that the gun was removed, as it wasn't a threat to anyone else, she said. She said she asked him if he felt like killing himself, and he asked her, "Why shouldn't I?" She said she mentioned his children to him. He deeply loved his children, she said. He said the main thing that was on the front burner of his mind was the way in which his career had been brought to conclusion. She added that her brother was awash with stress in the final months of his life. Jonathan Ball, Chief Executive of the Royal Marines Association, spoke to him in the weeks before his death. He told the inquest that Major General Holmes feared for the lives of close personal friends in the Afghan army who had been left behind. He feared for their lives and the lives of their families. He felt that somehow he had personally failed them by failing to get them out. Coroner Jason Pegg concluded that Major General Holmes died of suicide. He added, Major Holmes, Matthew Holmes, was suffering from substantial stress which contributed to his death. Major General Holmes served in Northern Ireland, Kosovo, Iraq and Afghanistan and was Commandant General Royal Marines from 2019 to April 2021. He commanded 42 Commando Royal Marines from 2006 to 2008 and was appointed as a Companion of the Distinguished Service Order for his leadership on operations in Afghanistan in 2007. He was made a CBE in 2019 and was a pallbearer at the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral in April 2021. In a statement, Ms. Holmes paid tribute to her kind and generous husband. She added, he had committed his life to serving in the Royal Marines and he took immense responsibility for the lives of those he served alongside very seriously. Not a day would go by without him thinking of the men under his command who were lost or injured, and of course their families. Alongside the demands of his career, Matt was a loving father who adored his children and would have hugely admired their resilience over the last 18 months.
Villagers out in force for annual litter pick. Enthusiastic volunteers turned out in force recently for the annual Headbourneworthy Village Spring Clean. The parish council provided bags, high-vis waistcoats and litter pickers, and hosts Trish and David Spurling of Silverstream provided their cottage garden for villagers to meet and have a warming coffee and biscuit before setting off. Parish Council Chairman Jane Rutter said, "We were delighted so many local volunteers turned up. We were able to allocate every road in the village to be cleared. Huge quantities of bottles were collected from the verges of Wellhouse Lane, which will be recycled. Please take your litter home with you if passing through our village. We can confidently say that over 90% of rubbish collected from the verges around the village has been thrown out of passing cars. This is illegal as well as antisocial and can attract fines of up to £1,000. King's Barton, which is in the civil parish of Headbourneworthy, will have a similar event later in the spring, organised by the Residents Association and supported by the Parish Council. And this is accompanied by a beautiful photo of 18 litter pickers, all in their high-vis jackets and with their litter pickers, and some still with their mug of coffee, and right in the middle is Jane Rutter, who you will know from being one of our regular readers, and immediately behind her a lovely photo of Trish and David Spurling, who hosted the event, and their beautiful half-timbered house rather than cottage behind them.
House gutted in early morning blaze. Firefighters from seven stations tackled the fire in which the house's roof collapsed. Crews from seven fire stations attended a house fire in a hamlet near Alsford early on Monday. Firefighters from Alsford, Alton, Basingstoke, Cosham, Droxford, Fleet and St Mary's all responded to the fire in Pound Lane, Upper Weald, which was reported at approximately 1 a.m. Two sets of breathing apparatus, five main jets, two hose reel jets, one ladder and one aerial ladder platform were used at the incident, which is thought to have started in one of the bedrooms. While the roof of the building did collapse, Hampshire Fire Service reported that nobody was injured in the incident. But a relief crew remained on the scene on Tuesday to dampen down the remnants of the fire. And there's a dramatic photograph taken at night. The sky is black, the earth is black, the house is grey, and the whole of the downstairs floor is unlit. But the four second floor, first floor windows all have the flames behind them. They're bright crimsony red against all this black background. And the fire is just coming out of the house at the top. It's all fire. There's no roof. The fire's just able to go straight up through the house.
Falcon's Little Foursome. And this is accompanied by a lovely picture from above of the Winnie the Falcon, the cathedral falcon, with her four eggs. Winnie the Peregrine has laid her fourth and possibly last egg of the year. Winchester Cathedral's resident peregrine laid her latest egg last week. Winnie had two chicks last year, named Elizabeth and George, who flew the nest in August. Her partner, William, has been sharing incubating duties. Writing on the Winchester Cathedral website on March 29th, Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, said, "It is very rare for peregrines to lay five eggs, although Winnie did this in 2020 and raised all of those chicks to the flying stage. So we expect her to stop with four this year. We expect these eggs to start hatching on April the 29th or the 30th.
And now theatre group rolls back the years with 70s comedy caper. A Winchester amateur theatre group is celebrating its 50th birthday this year. The Worthy Players was established in 1973 and has put on more than 150 shows, including pantomimes, drama, comedy, variety and music hall. To mark its 50th birthday, a special anniversary booklet is being produced, including photos from previous productions, stories and memories from the last five decades from current and past members. A 50th birthday party is also planned for the summer. The players are returning to their 1970s roots as part of the celebrations with their latest production of Some Mothers Do Have 'Em. The play, an arrangement with Concord Theatricals Limited and written by Guy Unsworth and Raymond Allen, is based on the popular 1970s sitcom featuring the accident-prone Frank Spencer and his long-suffering wife Betty. It will be one of the most challenging and ambitious productions ever undertaken by the Amateur Dramatics Group. Chairperson Martin Pettigrew, who will direct the show, said, "We were keen to find a play which celebrated the group's 50-year history, and this version of Some Mothers Do Have 'Em, only recently made available by Concord Theatricals Limited, seemed appropriate and contemporary enough to complement other recent successes by the group, including Cash on Delivery and Vicar of Dibley in 2019. Rehearsals for Some Mothers Do Have 'Em are well underway, with a complicated set being constructed and the technical team working out how to recreate Frank's legendary mishaps and disasters. The show will take place at Jubilee Hall in Kingsworthy from May the 19th to May the 20th, and then again on May the 26th to May the 27th. All performances will commence at 7:30 p.m, except on May the 27th, which will instead start at 6:30 p.m. For more information and ticket sales, visit theworthyplayers.co.uk. The group plans for two productions per year, one taking place in late spring and a Christmas pantomime. During rehearsal periods for these shows, the group meets on Tuesday and Wednesday nights at the Jubilee Hall and is always keen to welcome new members, whether budding actors, backstage or front of house. Plans are already in place for this year's panto in December, which will be Dick Whittington, the same panto performed in the very first production 50 years ago. And there are three lovely photos, one of a 2010 production of Allo Allo, definitely a play, another of a music hall in 1991, where they're all singing and dancing, and a black and white photo of 1978 review, 20s review, where they're all dancing in beautiful 1920s costumes with necklaces and hands in the air, beaming delightedly.
Grant keeps hall lunch on the menu, and there's a photograph of several tables at which smiling people are sitting, having clearly had a nice lunch. A village hall will be able to keep providing warmth to its community through its warm hub scheme, thanks to a grant from the Borough Council. Chilbolton Village Hall has received funding from Test Valley Borough Council's Cost of Living Grant Scheme, which has provided the hall with a £1,000 grant to support the weekly community event, which aims to bring residents together in a warm and welcoming environment. The Chilbolton Warm Hub Lunch Club is open to all residents and provides an opportunity to socialise and connect with others in the community. The event provides a healthy lunch and refreshments to those attending. Thanks to the grant support, the venue is set to host the weekly activity throughout the rest of 2023. Councillor David Drew, who attended the event, said, "The scheme is designed to support initiatives that bring our communities together and improve the quality of life for our residents. Jill Bolton Warm Hub Lunch Club is a great example of this."
Haircut team do their bit for homeless. A team of Hampshire hairdressers visited a homeless shelter in Winchester to provide free haircuts. Lorraine Rose of 12 Hair Design in Chandler's Ford worked with Tracy Shepherd from House of Hair in Bishopstoke and JC of Guy Creamer in Lymington to cut the hair for more than 20 guests at Winchester Beacon. On top of their haircuts, Lorraine, Tracy and JC also provided guests with goodie bags sponsored by 12 Hair Design suppliers. Lorraine said, "My local community is really important to me. I launched my salon just as we went into lockdown in 2020, and it was the kindness of my clients who come from all over Hampshire that kept me going. Every 6 weeks I volunteer at the Beacon to give something back. It was really uplifting to see the positive change in the guests' mood after a haircut on Sunday, and I hope others feel inspired to do the same."
Now, women carrying an inspiring message. Four women will be walking the whole of the South Downs Way while carrying a rowing boat to raise awareness of women and girls in sport. Starting from Winchester, the group titled There She Rows will trek 100 miles within 4 days over the Easter weekend, finishing in Eastbourne. The team of four, Victoria Monk 30, Anna Zigic 27, Ellie Reynolds 24 and Molly Green 26, is aiming to break the world record for the longest distance travelled by foot whilst carrying a boat. The 100-mile walk forms part of a broader campaign to raise the profile of women's sport, which will finish with a 3,000-mile Atlantic Ocean row at the end of the year. The women, previously strangers, united in 2022 to form There She Rows, with shared belief that more needs to be done to ensure sport is a safe and inclusive space for all. They hope to highlight the inequalities that exist for women in sport, in particular the number of girls that drop out of sport when they reach puberty. Each mile represents 10,000 girls that drop out of sport. All the women have sporting backgrounds, including activities such as Iron Woman races, ultramarathons, cold water swimming, rowing and rugby. Team captain Victoria Monk said, "More than half of girls will quit playing sport by the age of 17, missing out on its myriad benefits for the rest of their lives, and we want to change that. All four of us have been lucky enough to benefit from sport throughout our lives, physically, mentally, personally and professionally. We want to help inspire the next generation of girls and women to fall in love with sport and exercise. We wanted to walk the length of the South Downs Way to help raise the profile and inspire more women and girls to get into sport. By carrying the rowing boat with us, we represent the countless barriers preventing girls from getting involved with or staying in sport." There She Rows is fundraising for the Women's Sport Trust and Endometriosis UK and Teenage Cancer Trust. And this is it includes a photograph of Victoria Monk, the captain, with the rowing boat, which they're about to carry. It does look very long and thin and light. And behind her, rowing down the river, are other rowers also practising this skill.
Fury at even fewer buses on a new route. Swanmore and surrounding area residents have expressed concerns about a replacement bus service following the scrapping of two routes. Villagers say the new service is less frequent and poorly connected. Hampshire County Council is funding the new stagecoach service, offering 5 daily round trips to replace the Zelebus X9 and X10. However, local residents criticised the new 49 service ahead of its first trip this Monday. Stuart Jones posted on the Facebook group Swanmore Village chat room last week, "The X9 X10 services finish this week. Yes, there were issues with the routing and timing of these, but the intended replacement, 49 service, is even less frequent and doesn't provide connections either at Botley or Hedge End. No Saturday service either. Public subsidy money is tight, but suggested minor changes to the timetable could have at least provided some connectivity. These have not been accepted by Hampshire County Council. As it stands, the intended service does not align to agreed Hampshire County Council policies. Mr. Jones is referring to the Council's Bus Service Improvement Plan, which states an ambition for buses to be more frequent, more reliable, easier to understand and use, better coordinated and cheaper, providing in fully integrated service. Meanwhile, a parent of two Swanmore College pupils said she's received little information from the school and is unsure what the change means for her kids. Care home manager Hannah Dean of Marlow Road said, "Well, I'm not sure how I'll get my children to and from school. My job needs me to be flexible. I rely heavily on the bus service to ensure my children can travel safely. This will have a huge impact on us as a family. Safety is a huge concern, as there will be no doubt occasions when they'll need to walk and the pavements are not at all suitable." Fellow parent Alison Trott agreed with Hannah and has been in contact with Hampshire Transport for clarity. Alison, whose child gets the bus from Albany Road in Bishop's Waltham, said, "As a parent, I have very little knowledge of what's happening. We had no communication from Hampshire Transport. We've been left hanging as to what will happen. The children don't know how they'll get to school after Easter." The County Council has been asked to comment.
New cops no longer need to have degrees. Hampshire County Hampshire Constabulary are the first in the country to announce a change in how officers can join the force. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones has campaigned for the end of the compulsory police entry degree due to believing that practical common sense and life skills are just as important as academic ability. Now the force has announced a new scheme called Policing Plus, which will allow police officers to join via a non-degree entry route and current officers also to transfer onto this scheme. Launched by Chief Constable Scott Chilton, officers can leave the classroom behind to instead have an apprentice skills-based focus on learning on the job, in particular investigative skills. Donna Jones, PCC, and APCC National Victims Lead, said modern policing requires a mix of skills: common sense, people skills, academic acumen, and a will to make a difference. Unfortunately, the compulsory police degree has put off a number of highly skilled men and women who would make brilliant police officers. She added, "Giving people a choice whether to complete a police degree or not is the right thing to do. It's more equal and will appeal to more diverse communities. We want to attract good people from a range of backgrounds." Mr. Chilton said, "Those who remain on our degree programme will be fully supported, but we are losing too many competent operational officers who are either not academic or too pressured when faced with a degree and being a full-time police officer."
Face delays. Motorists will face delays on Chilbolton Avenue for the next 2 weeks, as the road will see closures due to ongoing road work. The works are being carried out by Hampshire County Council and consist of repairs to the carriageway. The closure will be enforced from 9:30 to 4 p.m. and will last from Monday, April the 3rd to Friday, April the 14th. The road will be reopened outside each working shift. Access to properties on the road will be maintained either by signed diversions or operatives, although there may be a short delay while the site is made safe. Further information about the closure can be found online at One Network. It is unclear whether the closure will lead to congestion on other nearby roads.
I'm afraid that's all that we've got time for this edition. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers: Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Favell, thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.